Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello and welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. My name is Carter Rodriguez. I'll be your host today. Your boy Justin Rowan, taking a couple weeks off. It's time for nuptials for Mr. Rowan. So much congratulations to the soon-to-be-married man. But in his place today, I have a friend of the show, recurring guest. We don't have that many recurring guests. Dave DeFore. How you doing, Dave?
Nice. I'm great. I feel honored to be the only. I'm just going to pretend like I'm the only recurring guest. Basically, I'm like the honorary co-host. I'm basically like Jay Leno was for Johnny Carson, for people who are my age.
Yep. That's not a dated reference at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, they don't really do fill-in hosts anymore,
I think,
do they?
I think that's just done. I just think they have to do it until they die.
Yeah, guys. Well, guys don't take time off. They have their hiatus whenever they're playing reruns, or I don't know who watches late night.
I just watch the clips at this point.
It's essentially they now make every little segment YouTubeable. Yeah. So yeah, that's what it all is anyway. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I just watch Netflix.
It's probably a business disaster for them, but it makes those shows imminently more consumable for me. A team that's going to be imminently more consumable for its viewers. With their decision today, will be the Cleveland Cavaliers. They just locked Kevin Love up on a 4-year extension worth $120 million. Kevin has secured the bag. It's a weird decision, right? And one that I think is inherently going to be a little controversial. What was your takeaway, Dave?
I definitely think people are going to look at this one of two ways. Wow, I can't believe Cleveland isn't going to tank. And wow, I can't believe they want to pay him $28 million when he's 34 years old. And both of those, I think, are the wrong way to look at it. They essentially just made Kevin Love a more valuable trade asset. Nobody was going to trade for Kevin Love on a rental. You know, he was going to opt out next summer. Now he can actually be traded. And by the time you're paying him $28 million, because this contract is... it's an extension, and it's $28 million, then like 31, 31, 28. I think that's how the math works out.
It's middle loaded. It's weird.
Exactly. But by the time you're at that, you know, $28 million on the last year of that deal, which he will be, you know, he's going to stay for the rest of this contract with someone. You're looking at a salary cap that's going to be like, I don't know, 125, maybe 130. It's really not that much money. And I don't think his game... You know, his game's not really predicated on athleticism. It's not like he's going to stop being able to shoot threes or stop being 6'10". And we're going to see Kevin Love, I believe, be the fulcrum of this offense. So we'll actually be able to see a very potent version of him. I don't think he's on the team beyond next summer. And you know, the timing of this extension, it sets him up so they can actually move him at the trade deadline. So, I look at this, it's a positive. Hey, I'm always a fan of these guys getting money. They have very short careers and you know, they're being paid by billionaires. So good for him. You know, he could get hurt tomorrow and now he's secure forever. So great for him. But I think it's good for the Cavs too, because, you know, you make sure you make him feel comfortable and then, you know, you work out a deal to move him, which is my assumption. I think that's what's going to happen. Well, how are you feeling?
I'm not 100% on. I think this does help them move him at a later date, as opposed to this insulates this insulates them losing him for nothing, which was looking quite possible if they weren't able to work out a deal, because as you said, didn't feel like good trade offers were just bursting down the door for a guy with an opt out on his deal, whose game has perhaps doesn't fit as well in the modern NBA as you might hope. But with that said, for those reasons, I still kind of think they're not going to get the deal they want out of this. I mean, and I don't think Kevin Love is so good that he can stop a tank. If the Cavs aren't good, he's not going to be the reason they don't keep their top 10 overall pick. I'm pretty confident in that. You know, the stat I gave to Justin was Marc Gasol played 73 games last year. And that didn't help the Grizzlies that much. You know, when you're talent efficient, which I think the Cavs are, you're not going to be very
good. Now, hold on. Don't forget, they've got the young king.
The young bull.
Jetty Osmond.
The young king, sorry. We've got the young bull.
I started calling him the young king. I thought you were
I'm
up
sorry.
On that.
My bad. My mistake. Maybe
that was just me. But yes, they also had the young bull.
So I don't know. I think that, I like the move whether they trade him or whether they keep him. Because in a lot of ways, you know, I mentioned the Marc Gasol thing because in a lot of ways, they have a little bit of a Memphis-esque arc right now where they have kind of an aging roster, but a couple young pieces worthwhile and a chance to go get another really good one. And Kevin Love fits with the roster they have right now. I think that matters a lot. It's not a situation where you have this all-star and it doesn't really work on the court at all, and he doesn't help your young guys. I mean, there are worse front court pairings to work with your budding young point guard who isn't much of a shooter and could probably use a little extra space than Kevin Love.
I agree. Here's what I'll argue. I'll argue the case of the pro blow it up analytics type folks. They could have had a nice reset this summer. Or next summer, I should say. This summer, I'm already into next season. So next summer, they could have had a really nice reset. They don't really have a whole lot of money on the books beyond this year. I want to say they only have one contract in the 1920 season. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like almost nothing.
Sexton.
So Jetty has a short contract. You know, sorry, I'm losing my voice.
Yeah, I know you're a little choked up about the Kevin Love
Jetty
sticking around. Cav for life. But yeah, I understand. I'm of two minds with the blow it up. I don't know if Cleveland is the type of place that can withstand another really terrible team, you know. And I think that the few years they had where it was, you know, they got all those number one picks. That was not a great time.
It wasn't.
And you got to think about this from an ownership perspective. Losing LeBron James probably halved the franchise's value if he were going to sell. I mean, maybe not half, but pretty close. You now have a team that will be lucky to get the eighth seed. I think that it's unlikely, but it's not impossible because they could win, you know, 40 games and possibly get in. If they go on a hot streak, you know. So, you know, but I understand the argument for blowing up, trying to get picks, trying to turn it around, trying to get a foundational superstar, which they don't have at the moment. I completely understand that. But at the same time, I think there's nothing wrong with just trying to put together a competitive team and being competitive. Like, I don't know. I've changed on this quite a bit in the last few years because, you know,
I think we all grew up a little bit.
Yeah, some of us have, but then there's a lot of us that are still team blow it up. Anytime, you know, you lose a star, it's like, oh, well, you got to blow it up. I mean, there are people calling for that in San Antonio where I am right now. And that's just not a team that's going to blow it up. And guess what? They're going to win 50 games this year.
Yeah, I don't, you know,
what I think is
interesting is like the biggest mistake these people make is assuming all franchises operate the same way. At the same level of competence. And, you know, we've saw the Cavs make mistake after mistake after mistake, trying to blow it up, trying to tank, you know, playing just some truly dog shit basketball. And what I keep coming back to is like, this front office, this organization can't really be trusted with Dan Gilbert at the helm. So I'd rather just stay decent and hope for some strokes of luck, you know?
Right. Well, and let's not forget that they've changed the lottery odds.
That matters. You know, people don't want to talk about that.
They've flattened it. It does matter. And you know, like, let's say you wind up with, the 10th pick. Okay. that's been pretty good here lately. You know, we've got a lot of good players in that 8 to 12 range. And so, you know, it's just, I don't know. I think that the idea that there's no value to having Kevin Love, who is a good basketball player, like this is an above average player. You know, he's an all-star in the East, which I know doesn't say much, but you know, this is a guy who actually can play basketball and he can play it well and he fits in with a lot of different players. He can stretch the floor. He is active on defense. He's not the terrible defender he was 4 years ago. You know, he actually, by virtue of competing hard, does more with less than a lot of guys who are, you know, like Andrew Wiggins is this crazy athlete, but just doesn't defend. Kevin Love, that's not an issue. You know, you never have to ask him to go out and play hard. It's part of why he's had some injury issues. You know, the guy plays really hard.
He also
hard.
Won't have to play as much center.
That's true. Yeah, he definitely won't. But like you said, you know, you've got these young guys. You're going to, you know, Jetty's going to get a chance. You know, they're going to put the ball in his hands, probably put him in the pick and roll some. Well, guess what? Now he's got an experienced pick and pop guy. You know, Kevin Love is going to be able to operate from the elbows and really like show off some of the stuff that we know that he can do, but he couldn't do when LeBron was there because they kind of operate in the same space. So, you know, I don't know. You're not going to spend that money on anything else right now anyway. You might as well re-sign him, you know, make everybody happy. And then again, you also have boosted his trade value. So, yeah, I just think this, I don't know. We've come to the point now where any guy that signs a contract, you know, that signs him till age 33 or 34, it's immediately called a bad contract. You pay, it's the upfront years. Really, like in this four-year deal, the first 2 years, he is definitely worth it. And then the next two, he might not be. But that's how the league has worked for a while now. You know, the Conley contract. You know, Memphis isn't going out and signing Chris Paul in the offseason, right? So you overpay to keep your guy. And yeah, those last 2 years of the Conley deal are going to be bad, potentially the last three if he's not healthy this year. Same with Cleveland. You know, Cleveland's not going out and signing a major free agent now that LeBron's
gone. Yeah, it's like...
It's just
they
not
really
going to
happen.
They
really only can get the one. And
right.
I think that one's over.
Right. You can't treat your Clevelands and your Memphises and even Toronto. You cannot treat them the same when they're signing their guys to these deals. I you know, like look at the DeRozan contract. You know, a lot of people feel like that was an overpay. Kyle Lowry, although I thought they did a nice job on Lowry's contract to make it 3 years. You know, so you got to get a little creative there. But at the same time, like the dollars, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And in particular, when these guys are declining, but the markets are just totally
That's
different
a tax
for some
you pay.
Teams.
I think right. The way to look at the Love deal is all about opportunity cost. I think that's a really good way to evaluate a lot of deals, as opposed to just evaluating them on their head. Is to just always think, okay, what would they be doing if they didn't do this? I think that's a really good way to contextualize a lot of signings that. Otherwise might fool you, right? Like, because I think that's really easy to happen. I think, you know, you can look at, like, if you remember that the Serge Ibaka trade to Orlando, you can think, oh, well, like, that player's pretty good, and they gave up not that much. And sure, you know, like, they gave up Oladipo, you know, seemed underperforming. Like, you could talk yourself into the players, but then you look at what the, you know, the tangential results around it, what they couldn't do, what they had to do, or in the decisions they were forced into. And that trade looks horrible for Orlando, right? Same with when the Bulls traded for Zach LaVine or LaVine. Like you think, oh, well, he's a good young player. But then you look at what the opportunity costs that come up this summer. It's like, oh, well, now they feel like obligated to match. So I think that's a really good way to analyze free agency. And for the Cavs, there isn't as much opportunity cost as there was in other situations when transactions go down. They lose the right to they lose cap space, right? They lose potentially development spots at the power forward position, but they don't have any developmental players there, so that's not really a huge issue, other than hashtag Billy Preston season.
Talk about him.
They lose, you know, they lose the opportunity to take on a bad deal, perhaps with the cap space they create. But ultimately, when you look at the upsides, I just think they far outweigh the downsides with this. And while the number is scary and while the years are scary, when you look at the alternatives, I just think that this was the right call.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you, man. And it's you know, it's nice to actually be able to put some perspective to this, because I think that's what's been missing from the Twitter conversation on it. You know, a few people have pointed out that, you know, this is going to make him easier to trade and whatnot. And then, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, well, Kevin Love has no trade value.
He didn't before.
Yeah, that's just not. Yeah, but he does now.
Yeah.
And, you know, you may take back, you know, a bunch of dimes for him, but that's okay. You know, this is a team that can afford to, like, say, you know what? Hey, we like this second year guy that you don't maybe see much in. Maybe we can do something with him. And, you know, I just think that the team, it's just tough because we look at Cleveland and they've just been so competitive the last 4 years that, you know, you kind of look at them through the same lens, but that this is a different team. Again, I think the Memphis comp is a little bit closer than I meant for it to be. Actually, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, you know, like, it's pretty similar situation. Only they've got a couple of guys that I really like, a couple of young guys that I really like. Although Jaren Jackson is going to be amazing.
I know you've been watching him.
I've been watching him a lot because I'm writing a scouting report about him right now. But yeah, he's just
maybe this is insane. Dumb, but as I've like developed as a sports fan, certain things have my priorities have changed in a lot of ways, and I've gotten more sentimental, and I've gotten less interested in like the abstract. I think 21-year-old Carter is saying, trade Kevin Love, burn it down, let's get some high draft picks. 27-year-old Carter, he's like, dude, I don't want to watch a dog shit team every day.
Well, yeah, I mean I'm going in your old age. You've definitely become a softie.
I think I'm getting softer as I'm getting older. Like, and like, I'm not saying I'm an old man here. I just think like there's a difference in perspective of like, this is supposed to be a fun hobby, and watching Jeremy Pargo put up 26 shots is not my idea of fun. And there's also the sentimental value of, now that Channing Frye's been re-signed, the Cavaliers have 4 players from their championship team left on the roster. Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, and Channing Frye. And this is something my friend Ryan Morton, also friend of the pod, says a lot, is like, what are you building? Like, what is it to be a Cavalier? And like, if you're just completely jettisoning everything that just happened in the most important, for the most important team this franchise will ever have, I don't know. There's something a little dirty to that.
Yeah, you don't want to be cavalier about it.
Oh, fuck you. but yeah, I don't know. I just think that there's value in watching a decent team. There's value in the kids having a situation where they can grow, because we watched guys like Kyrie and Dion learn the worst possible habits when they were dicking around for 4 years, to the point where LeBron nearly like played like a week in protest when he came back because he was so upset about how shitty these guys were.
Right.
And the way they carried themselves professionally. Having guys like Kyle Korver around. Now, I think the next step is, I don't think this team should be done making moves, because with Kyle Korver's partially guaranteed contract next year, George Hill's partially guaranteed contract next year, and JR's partially guaranteed contract next year, those are 3 pieces that should hypothetically have quite a bit of positive value on a trade market, with teams trying to load up for a big free agency that have, you know, 1-2 years left of some really bad contracts on their books.
Yeah, I agree, and actually I'm kind of down with leaning in a little bit on having Colin Sexton as your starting point guard. You're going to be bad this year. Like, you know, you could make the 8th seed, right? But that's not great, not in the East. You're going to be bad, and point guards are typically bad as rookies, like really bad. In particular, guys like Sexton are going to have the ball in their
hand. Even the
a lot.
Ones who end so up good, might as well. By the way, guys.
Absolutely. All of them. Every single one of them. Like Donovan Mitchell, he's a combo guard, but he played essentially as the lead ball handler last year. He was kind of shockingly good, and he still wasn't. I mean, he was good, but he wasn't great. Like, he's going to be better. Because of it. So getting to take those lumps in a season where you're not expected to do much, I think is good, right? Like the pressure will be off. Oh, well, Cleveland's not that good anyway. Rather than going George Hill and bringing Colin Sexton off the bench, I think it would be better to play Sexton.
Can I curveball you real quick?
With Kevin Love.
Dave?
You absolutely can,
I think they're
going
to start Hill and Sexton together.
Interesting.
That is my bold prediction.
I don't think that's terrible. That's a pretty good point of attack defense.
Yeah, I mean, both guys can defend. Both have huge wingspans. Well, Sexton can defend in theory. Not in practice yet. But Hill has like a 7-foot wingspan or something ridiculous.
And people always forget that.
So he can
it's
play
shooting
guard
defense do stuff.
In a pinch.
Sure.
Now you're...
Well, he played there a lot with the Pacers, and he played there a lot with the Spurs.
And... While I do think there is a degree of like, and I've said this before with Justin, I think we slightly overrate wingspan relative to height. I still think being taller matters. I think having your shoulders up in a guy's grill as opposed, I think the wingspan helps, obviously, but I don't think I'd rather have a taller guy with the same wingspan as opposed to with the same standing reach. Than a shorter guy with the same standing reach. Like, I still think that matters. But in a pinch, you can play that guy as shooting guard. He can shoot. He can have some secondary creation to help ease Sexton's burden.
He's at his best, by the way, as a secondary creator.
Or probably even tertiary at this point, which maybe will happen with, you'll be able to run some pick and roll with all three of him, Sexton, and Osman, who, while Osman still can't dribble, I think they're going to try to develop that part of his game, and rightfully so, in my opinion. We'll see what they do there. But I don't think they're going to start JR, and I guess the Rodney Hood situation complicates things, but I guess we'll assume he's not on the team until he is.
I'll tell you, man, that has been... I don't know. I was high on Rodney Hood coming out of Duke, and I thought Rodney Hood was going to be amazing last year with more opportunity, and then Donovan Mitchell happened.
Yeah.
And then Rodney Hood was hurt, as usual.
And then he quit on the team.
And then he quit. I can't believe that they haven't rescinded the qualifying offer.
It's a weird... I've talked about this a lot with Chris and Justin and Ashley, the Fear the Sword crew. It's a really weird spot because on one hand, you traded assets for the guy and he does have promise. He is 25 years old. He can shoot. He can score a little bit off the dribble. He can create a little bit of the pick and roll. He's a theoretically good defender.
He's got really short arms,
but he's got some size at least. He's at least tall. Which helps.
Right.
But then you have this really ugly cloud looming over him. But then that same cloud is enabling you to potentially sign this guy for nothing. Like, I mean, what's the worst deal that they could get him on? Like, 2 for 15? 2 for 16? Like,
hell, they could probably get him. I mean, what's the qualifying offer for him?
Like 3.6.
Yeah, like, they may wind up getting him for that because there's just no market for him, which I'm shocked by.
But I think the value, I'm not shocked by it because teams overreact to stuff in the playoffs just like anyone else, right? And he was
at the same time, it's a wing league, and he's shown that he can score. And I think that, I'm surprised someone hasn't thrown out a, 2-year, $16 million. I'm surprised by it.
With such a bad showing, if he were an unrestricted free agent, I think he'd have a deal by now. But I think early in free agency, especially early on, everyone's like, we're not tying up our cap space for 3 days for that guy.
Right. And now no one has cap space.
Now the Cavs are in such a position of power here. But I do think that there's an interesting line to be drawn of do you try to lock him up for a couple of years? Try to see where this can go. Because if he takes a qualifying offer, you're not operating in a position of strength.
Not at all.
Like, you want to offer him as little as possible for as many years as possible is still somehow preferable to the qualifying offer. That's not fucking your cap sheet up. It's really weird.
I would do a cheaper version of what the Jazz did with Exum. I would maybe try 3 years, $7 million per.
Yeah, 3 for 21.
And 3 for 21, fully guaranteed, no options. And just see what happens. Because God, man, there's a player in there.
But right? Can that player happen in Cleveland? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm having
that's
a hard
the question.
Time. Feeling like my personal bridge isn't burned.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's all about, like, how does the organization feel? I mean, they obviously played him after this. I mean, he played meaningful minutes. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe they worked it out, and maybe it's not as big of a deal as we think it is. But it was a big deal to me when it happened.
Yeah, dude.
I couldn't believe it.
The worst possible look. And, yeah, I guess, like, it all comes down to, first you have to decide if you want him around. But as soon as you decide you want him around, you have an interesting dance to play. And I'm interested to see how it plays out. My guess, if I had to venture one, I think he's going to take the qualifying offer.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And the Cavs will have another wing to figure it out with.
Is Korver getting moved, you think?
It's a weird spot. The Bayless stuff never held any water with me because it didn't make sense. Because the Cavs are going to, the best case scenario for the Cavs with any of these young guys, or with any of these, sorry, not young guys, with any of these guys who have non-guaranteed deals, the Korvers, the JRs, the Hills, is that, especially in Korver's case, you send him to a team that needs them. You know, let's say like the Bucks or someone wanted Kyle Korver, but that also had a bad contract that they wanted to send back. Because Korver on his own, he's worth maybe a second. You know, like, he's 37. Like, come on. And JR, you know, you could argue as a player is negative value right now.
Right.
You would probably also argue the same, or you wouldn't argue the same with George Hill, who is still a useful player. But especially someone like Korver or Hill, you can give a team a rotation player and get them off terrible money, and that gets you up to, okay, now we're talking maybe a first. And I think the Cavs should be in the business of picking up first-round picks right now for their assets that are non-essential moving forward. So the Bayless thing never made sense because Bayless was on an expiring deal. So it would just be trading a player for a player, an expiring for an expiring, basically. And getting, you know, maybe a decent second out of it. I just don't think it's worth it for the Cavs to do that. When you look at the value Korver has in the locker room.
Exactly. That was where I was coming from. And you're getting a worse player.
Yeah. I think Bayless would have been.
That second rounder's not worth
it. Like,
that
you
much.
Already have six
yeah,
of those
exactly.
on the team already. Like, it would have been just for the pick. That would have been the real haul. And it's just not enough. It's a weird. And like, I think Sixers fans, if they heard that, would be like, well, screw you. You don't get a first for Korver. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. Which is why deal isn't going to happen. And that's okay.
The Cavs they've made their bed and now they have to lay in it. And this is kind of what they knew was going to happen all along, you know, if LeBron left. So
honestly, I'm fine having a guy like Kyle Korver around to teach Jetty Osmond how to be a pro. Like,
you won a title.
Yeah, won a title.
Right? Like, that's the thing, is you won a title 2 years ago.
I just think sometimes there's an assumption among, like, NBA fans that any two teams can make a trade. You can find a way to make it work. And that's just not true.
Every contract is movable, but I don't think every guy is like, highly
that's
desired.
Not even what I'm saying. Again, what I'm saying is you can have a team like the Sixers, they can say, okay, we want Kyle Korver, but assets
don't
line up.
Finding an amenable trade,
to make it work. because the incentives don't jive just the right way. Now, right. if the Sixers had a terrible deal to get off of, like just a trash deal that they hated, then you could say, okay, yeah, we'll do that for Korver, but we'll need, you know, like a protected 2021 first or something like that.
Sure. But nobody's moving to 2021 first,
but if you protect it or something. Point is,
yeah,
you could do that, but it doesn't work there. So I think that the Cavs should be very diligent with these three trade pieces they have, because I think these non-guarantees on the back end of their deals are going to be valuable, especially George Hill. I mean, you could bail Memphis out of Chandler Parsons for that. And you can ask for some stuff.
Hey, they were trying to attach their first rounder this year that turned into Jaren Jackson.
Yeah.
To move Chandler Parsons, which would have been
And I think they would have asked for a lot, and that's why it didn't happen. But the point is, teams are going to be desperate to get off money that have, you know, what could you get from the Hornets if you wanted to help them get off Batum and MKG?
Oh, yeah, you could probably
there
get
are bad deals around. And for players that the Cavs wouldn't be miserable to add necessarily. And those are the deals that Kobe Altman needs to be looking for now that Kevin Love is locked up.
Yeah. So are you optimistic about this year? Am I too optimistic in saying that I feel like they could possibly win 40 games?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're gonna have the 23rd best record in the league.
I just think the East sucks so bad.
Yeah, but like so I think bad. What people are underestimating when they're looking at a few players that they like on this Cavs team, and I know that you're not saying that you think they're great. Just you're just mainly comparing them against how bad the East is. But
exactly,
my point has always been one: if they're winning 40 games, that means your wildest dreams came true about Colin Sexton and Jetty Osman.
Well, also Kevin Love. See, this is the thing. Basically, what I'm saying is, I'm
Kevin
looking
Love,
at
when
what
Kevin
Minnesota
Love was
used
doing
to do.
Great, how many games did the Wolves win? 30,
40.
One
right?
year?
That's really what it is. Yeah, it's like peak Kevin Love got him to 40 wins, and that's what I'm thinking. It's like, all right, we're going to get peak Kevin Love and not fat Kevin Love. This is in shape.
What about,
you know,
playing 58
doing
games Bo. Kevin Love?
You think that's what we're getting?
You guys missed like 20 games a year for the last 3 years.
That's true. Well, and he's probably going to get moved at the deadline anyway. So it's a moot point.
Yeah, I don't know, man. And then I think you can't. I just refuse to understate the impact of having your entire team built around one player. And then everything you do is built around that one player. And then all of a sudden you're just supposed to completely change your identity in 3 months.
Well, while only adding Channing Frye.
And Colin Sexton.
Also Billy Preston, who is a really impressive athlete.
I don't even think he's that impressive of an athlete.
No, this is... I'm trying to be on the positive.
But
here,
I don't know, man. I just think like when you look at that much change, and you have to factor in those gut punches. Those matter. And it's hard to change your entire mentality when you're playing with the same group of guys, but with this main key cog that just isn't there anymore.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. How is Ty Lue going to do?
I have no clue.
Do you see him?
I mean, this Ryan Morton's already shaking his head. Just kidding. He would never listen to a pod with just me on it.
But I'm on it.
Fair. He still won't listen.
Yeah, and we met IRL.
Oh, that's nice. So Mort's great. I love Mort.
And he's really funny.
Mort is already shaking his head because he hates when we talk about coaches, because we don't know what we're talking about, especially when we're diving into their head of like their mentality.
Oh, right. I was going to say, I would challenge that. I tend to feel like I got a pretty good read on some of these guys. Head coaches. Now, assistant coaches, I can't tell you.
Yeah, it's just like always like
that. I don't think anyone can.
You know, when you don't know the interpersonal relationships and you don't know what's going on, there is a fair amount of guesswork going on when you're not talking about straight
Absolutely.
Scheme. And
I will say this. I will say that this year will be an easier job because the expectations are lower. So I'm hoping that Ty Lue is healthy.
Yeah, I hope he's healthy because, I mean, clearly had a nightmare year last year for 1,000 reasons.
Yeah.
I think he'll be fine. I think there's a world in which he falls asleep at the wheel. Because it's like, I would personally, but like all of my takes on this are so based on my own projection. And it's like, I would have a hard time going from competing for championships to like, come on, guys, we can beat the Nets on the road.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be eating popcorn. Yeah,
come on,
the bench.
Fellers. Like, I just would struggle.
Yeah,
it's like the old like movie trope of like the big city kid goes back to his country bumpkin hometown. That's what the Cavs are.
Oh no. Well, the one silver lining is we're gonna get ton of Ante Zizic.
I like Zizic. Did you watch the Cavs summer league action at all?
Yeah, I watched some. Yeah,
what'd you think?
I had to go watch my boy Colin. I like Zizic. I do like him.
He didn't look like an NBA player last summer league for Boston. And he looked pretty freaking good.
Yeah, he's looking in good shape. He looked like a guy who has now been in the league, you know, for a season, right? Like, so those guys typically show up to summer league and look better than everyone else. And that's to me, that's part of the progression for a guy who's, you know, not going
to
be a superstar.
Especially when they didn't get to play all year. Like, you want to see those guys at summer league like clearly be better than everyone else, than their peers.
Like, Yabusele is a good example of this. Now, he did play more than Zizic, but at the same time, he wasn't like, you know, Jaylen Brown. He wasn't playing like Jaylen Brown minutes. So, Yabusele goes out there and looks head and shoulders above, you know, the rest of the guys. You know, Semi Ojeleye, who did play a lot, it looks like he didn't. Oh man, why is he playing at summer league? You know, Josh Hart. Kind of the same way. Now, Zizic is, of course, like much fewer minutes than those guys.
He only played two games because Croatia made the World Cup final and the Cavs let him go home.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, he definitely looked good in those couple games. So, I think that, you know, it'll be good to actually see him getting some rotation minutes. I'm assuming we're going to see him. I don't know. Is he going to be with the second big off the bench? Is he going to be coming behind Nance?
This roster is weird, Dave. And I've talked about it a little bit on other podcasts, but they've got like five centers they got to play between Thompson, Nance. I think Fry will mostly be just a bench guy, but like he actually helps you play Thompson and Nance at the four.
Right.
So you kind of have to give him some minutes because you don't have a backup power forward right now. So you kind of need to play Fry a little bit. So it's going to be hard to find Zizic minutes. This team needs a couple consolidating moves. Just to clear guys who need to play off the roster to get room for their other guys who need to play. Like Jordan Clarkson, fuck out of here. And I think...
I mean, the Lakers are going to be, you know,
they love guys like Clarkson on that roster, clearly.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a Tristan Thompson trade out there. I haven't really thought about it a whole lot, but...
it feels like he might need to go. And I don't love saying that, but it feels like that might be the case.
Yeah, I think that there's a deal out there for him. I mean, he's got this year and next year left.
Yeah, that is true.
Okay, yeah, and so yeah, I mean, $13 million.
It's not that bad of a contract. People like to lose their minds.
It's not.
It's not that bad. But he also wasn't very good last year, so it's hard to know.
Yeah. Yeah, but the things that he does well, if you just focus on those, right? Like offensive rebounding and setting screens. Now, I know that those, you know, setting screens is valuable and offensive rebounding is not really. I think you have to rebound it like as a team at like 45% for it to be worthwhile. 45% offensive rebounding rate. Which would be insane. But he's not like a bad player, and at $13 million, you know, in this environment,
I think you might be able to do.
I don't think it's too bad.
I don't think you're going to get positive value out of him, but you might be able to get neutral. And if that opens up more room for the guys who need to play, you might need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe talk to Atlanta.
Yeah,
you know, see what they had going on.
They are just the America's dumping ground at this point.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I wonder if there's a deal.
It's certainly possible.
I wonder if there's a deal.
Before we wrap, I think we should probably hit on some some leaked news at large. Kawhi passed his physical. He's
what a surprise.
Despite the loud protestations from his camp, clearly, or from some camp in the aftermath of the trade. I think he's got a better chance of staying than people think.
Oh, I definitely think so. I definitely think so.
I just think that team makes so much sense. And I know Cavs fans aren't going to love hearing that after we shit on the Raptors year after year after year. But they just make sense, man. Like, across the board, top to bottom. You know exactly how they're going to play. You know it's going to work. And I might be the world's biggest Danny Green fan.
No. You're the second. You know this, right?
Do you love him?
Did you make that joke? Oh, my God. Hold on.
No,
I didn't know that? Yeah, Danny Green is, like, my favorite player.
He might be my favorite role player in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, I really mean that. And you know, knowing that he was fighting injuries, last season, and that really affected his shooting. I mean, I knew this before they came out. You know, like, I knew about the groin thing. He's had, like, an ankle
sources,
thing,
Brad,
or a knee thing. No. I mean, like, this was not news to me, right? Like, we know he suffered a groin injury. Yeah. Yeah. Well, groin injuries also take a long time to heal. I have this whole thing about injuries where people just assume because the guy's on the court, he's fine. But, like, if you sprain your ankle in September, you know, like in mini camp or in training camp, you're screwed for the year. That's just how it is.
You're just going to hurt.
That ankle is
for a while.
It's not going to be stable, and playing on it just makes it worse. So these guys that take like 10 days off and then come back, they're just not going to be right. Marcus Smart has fallen victim to this like 3 times out of 4 in his career. 3 years out of 4, he has wrecked his ankle, and I think it really affects his shooting.
You know what else affects
Steph Curry
his shooting?
Last year? That he's
a
bad shooter?
Dog shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like Steph Curry last year, he hurt his ankle early, then hurt his knee.
Yeah.
And then hurt his ankle again and just was never right. Exactly. So, you know, those early injuries, I think people just, I don't know, they forget about it. But anyway, so yeah. But Danny Green, what he brings to the table defensively is
best transition defender in NBA history.
Absolutely. You took the words out of my mouth. The best transition defender in NBA history, where transition points are actually the easiest buckets you can possibly score. Danny Green makes it difficult.
I will, like, his possessions in the NBA Finals against the peak death machine Heat, where he would just shut down Wade LeBron 2-on-1s. He was
incredible.
Just amazing. It's just like...
And don't forget, he hit 27 threes in that final series.
People were going to give him Finals MVP after game 4. Like, he was so good. I love watching him play. He very rarely goes beyond himself. Sometimes he tries to dribble too much, but whatever.
Well, last year he showed that he learned how to dribble.
But it still should never be his, like, thing.
No,
but,
not his job. I think the Spurs are really going to miss him.
And I think that the Raptors are really going to love him. I just think the fact that every Raptors lineup that they've ever put out there in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, even as these teams have been very good, every lineup they've ever put out has had some sort of, like, consolation they've had to make. Like, they've had to be like, well, we can play Lowry, Van Vliet, and DeRozan, but we're going to be super small. Or, you know, like, we can play Ibaka and Jonas, but we're not going to be super mobile. Like,
they have everything
lineups
now.
They can play lineups that are both good and flexible without a ton of concessions. And
their death lineup, like, is just going to be, they actually now, they have a team that would probably beat the Cavs with LeBron. They have it this year. Like, this team, like, they can close games. Right. They can close games with, like, Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, OG Anunoby, and Pascal Siakam at the 5, or Ibaka at the 5, or, you know what I mean? Like, any combination of those guys. I, like, That is insane. I said on my podcast yesterday on the NBA with
nice
Dave
plug.
Before, yeah, I said I feel like they're a little bit better than the Celtics because I do think that when you have the best player, you have an advantage. And I think Kawhi, you know, if we're going into the season, assuming he's healthy and hasn't like forgotten how to play basketball, Kawhi is the best player in the East. And they actually have all of this lineup versatility. And the Celtics sort of have that, but not in the way that Toronto does now. I think that Toronto has built a team that really can potentially challenge the Warriors. And it's crazy that just adding two players does that. But when you get Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, that's how it is. I mean, it's the best wing defender in the league.
My head wants to put the Raptors ahead of the Celtics, but my gut just has the Celtics ahead still. I think we're going to learn a lot about the ceiling of the Boston Celtics next year.
Remember, every other year they've been ahead of schedule. This is the year where
they might just go out and win 68 games or something outrageous. I really think that it's a good regular season team with unreal depth, with talent coming back healthy, with young guys, young legs, with a strong defensive identity. Everyone fits. They should be amazing, and I think we're slightly underrating them. Because we have a tendency to do that with Kyrie Irving's teams.
Yeah. How long is it going to be Kyrie's team, though?
That's fair. I mean, I'm not as high on Tatum as everyone else, though I think he's great.
Oh, I didn't mean like that.
Oh,
I
Hayward?
Mean, you know, is Kyrie going
to
be on the team?
I want Kyrie to go to New York.
I think he's going to New York. Whether he's traded there at the deadline or sooner, or... whether he leaves next summer, I think he's going to
Could you imagine how fun MSG would be if Kyrie was like dropping 50?
You know what? All right. So Matt Moore, who HP Basketball on Twitter, I believe that it was him, and hopefully it was him. But like, I actually said this when I forget what was happening, but there was a really fun Knicks game, and it was like, at the Garden, and it was just fun. You know, it's a knowledgeable basketball crowd. So when stuff is happening, for some reason, there's just a buzz in that arena. And then there's all the history and stuff. And I mentioned that, and he kind of poo-pooed it.
But
then a bunch of other people jumped in.
Love you, Matt.
I like Matt. But yeah. But then a bunch of other people kind of jumped in and said the same thing. And he was like, well, maybe I'm wrong. I'm with you on that. I think that MSG, when fun stuff is happening, I don't know why, but it just feels like it's more fun there. Sort of like Oracle, right? Like before it was only full of rich people.
Yeah.
When good stuff was happening, it was, you know, there's a reason why they called it Oracle.
Yeah, there's just certain, like, in that sense, like, I get why exceptionalism happens with fan bases, because it's just cool when certain teams are really, really good. I think it's, even if you hate them, I think it's interesting when Notre Dame football is really good or when the Yankees are really good. And I think the Knicks, like, as just one of those teams that you just think about when you think about the sport, despite determined efforts to make it not the case by their own organization, I just think, like, there's nothing more fun. Like, Linsanity isn't Linsanity anywhere else. And
absolutely
and
not.
I just think that Kyrie lighting up MSG in the orange and blue Knicks, I just think it's like such an easy picture.
Absolutely. And there's the whole New York point guard tradition. There's like all these fun things that are interwoven into the sport itself, right? Like not just the NBA. And I think that would be a lot of fun. And it'd be more fun if he's on the Knicks than the Nets.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think that matters a little bit. This is where we're getting into the sentimental stuff, right?
Sentimental man. And I already said earlier.
In your old age. Now, you're not old enough to remember this, but see, in the 90s, when the Knicks were decent, you know, they weren't great, but they were good. And they had these hard-nosed, fun teams to watch, right? Because they were hard-nosed. And, like, they never beat the Bulls, except for, you know, that one year when Jordan was playing baseball. But they never beat the Bulls. They just couldn't beat them. But those series were still so much fun because the garden was electric. It's why they'll never be able to get rid of that arena. It's just, it's an iconic place. And you know, it's a shame that the Lakers don't play in the Forum anymore, you know, like stuff like that. Cause I feel like that history of the game stuff that kind of carries over, I think it's fun. Like, it's really fun. Like, I like that they still call the TD Garden the Garden. Mm. You know what I mean? I think that's – and it's a weird thing to say, the name of it. But, like,
it does matter.
It's fun. It's fun.
Long,
yeah,
long
the parquet
the
and all that. I think
up,
that,
up on the north side of the state. Yeah, I don't know, man. It matters. And I think that having someone – that's where, like, the consolidation of talent in the league right now can kind of hurt. Is that there are franchises that just don't have shit.
Right. And the league doesn't love it. I mean, you know, they're not pumped about Durant being in Golden State. You know, I made a plea to a league executive at Summer League, and I was really pushing hard for expansion with teams only being able to protect two players.
Because just blow that shit up and start over.
Just mix it up a bit. You know,
that would be fun.
But that's not empowering players.
No, it's not. That is not a very woke opinion, Dave.
Well, you know, and I'm all for empowering players, so I'm good. But at the
we
same
can all
time,
harbor
like,
our own little our sure. own delusions. On that end, we should probably wrap. I should let you go. It's late. since you're bad at
time
zones.
It is. I'm terrible
at
time zones.
We still love you. Thank you so much for coming on, Dave. Where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at Dave Dufour NBA, and my podcast, you know, is on the NBA with Dave Dufour. The links all over Twitter, mostly on Twitter. I'll post everything on Twitter. I probably spend way too much time on
as
Twitter.
Do we all, Dave. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you'd like to support the podcast the old-fashioned way, you can always. Head over to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review. Really helps us with our listenership. If you'd like to contribute in a more tangible way, you can head over to patreon.com/thechasedown and become a patron. We would really appreciate any financial assistance you can give, but of course, always appreciated, never required. We're never going to charge you for this thing because no one would ever pay for it. What are you, stupid?
Hey, I am a
yes,
I am
are.
A patron.
Thank you.
of the Chasedown Patreon.
And we love you. And we're a patron. Incidentally, we're a patron of on the NBA with Dave Dufour. So, ultimately, no one's helping me either.
No one's making any money.
Patreon's just stealing 10% off us.
We're
we should both cancel right now.
We should. We're padding stats.
Totally padding
stats. Making each other look
more
important.
We are just in garbage time right now. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Once again, a big congratulations to your friend and mine, Justin Rowan, on his wedding. And as always, go Cavs.